How's it going, everyone? This is Garrett Corpenning for Locked On Clippers, the official Clippers podcast of the Locked On Podcast Network. In addition to this show, I also cover the team for Clipperholics, FanSided's one and only Clippers blog. You can also find me on Twitter at GA Corpenning and at Locked On Clips. That's GACHORPENNING and at Locked On Clips. Feel free to send me questions there, as well as comments and anything else you feel relates to LA Clippers basketball. So welcome back to the show, guys. It is Friday, June 1st, and this is going to be the final episode for this week. It's been a pretty exciting, pretty crazy week here at Locked On Clippers. NBA as well has been pretty eventful. A lot of stuff going on with the finals and that sort of thing as well. But June is going to be a pretty wild month in terms of the off season. We got the NBA draft coming up. We've got free agency at the end of the month. A lot going on around this time of year. So this, you know, could be one of the most exciting months of the year if, things do fall our way. Could be one of the most disappointing as well. So we're just going to see what happens with the team this month of June, and we'll go from there. So to start things off for today's show, I'll be talking about some breaking news rolling around Patrick Beverley. After that, I'll take a look at the top stories from this week in Weekly News Roundup. And to close today's show, I'll be reviewing Game 1 of the NBA Finals and why last night's game might have been the Cavs' best shot at winning on the road. So in case you haven't heard, guys, this morning ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski reported that LA Clippers point guard Patrick Beverley has been cleared to resume basketball activities roughly 3 months ahead of schedule. Beverley suffered a microfracture in his right knee that required season-ending surgery way back in November in his 11th game of the season against the New York Knicks. And at that point, he wasn't expected to return from that surgery until September 2018, which, as you know, is still 3 months away. But now, you know, he's good to go at the beginning of June. Earlier this morning, I reached out to Beverley on Twitter, sent him a message asking how he's feeling. And he told me that he almost cried when he heard the news. He was very excited and very emotional about the news. And that is something that we know about Beverley, is how much he does display his emotion on and off the court. Beverley, you know, he's one of the more tenacious, more outspoken players in the NBA and on the court and off the court. But, you know, on the court, Bev is a very tough and physical defender and doesn't mind, you know, using whatever he can to get in his opponent's heads. And, you know, that displays his emotions there. That kind of shows what he how he lives his life and that sort of thing. And it's pretty impressive to see that sort of thing on the court. So, you know, I do feel like with this season, I think that out of all the injuries the Clippers had to endure this past season, I do believe that Bev's was the hardest to take in a way. I do feel like his passion is pretty much unmatched throughout the rest of the NBA. And losing such a vocal leader on a team like that, you know, so early on, did seem like, in a way, it kind of signaled the beginning of the end of this past season for the LA Clippers. You know, from there on, Clippers lost Blake for a stretch. That was pretty hard to deal with. Gallinari, you know, played just 21 games last year. His constant injuries left a pretty big hole in the offense most of the time. And even when he was playing, he still wasn't his best. And then, you know, you missed Austin Rivers for about 20 games last season, too, and that wasn't easy. But, you know, when you have a leader like Bev, who can be that guy that can lead that team with his defense and with his passion and spirit, when you have him go down for 71 of the 82 games and you have him, you know, only play those first 11 games of the season, you know, that's a hard thing to recover from. And it makes a lot of sense as to why Clippers could have been on decline at that point in the season. But I do think that the fact that Beverley recovered so far ahead of time, it is surprising, but considering it is Beverley, it's hard to be completely surprised for long because, as we know, Bev is extremely disciplined. He's a tremendous player, has a tremendous spirit, and, you know, I do fully expect him to be back in full force at the beginning of the season, as well as preseason, and I'm sure he'll be playing his hardest in preseason workouts and that sort of thing as well. And I have a question about Beverley as well. I was thinking about this yesterday with my mock draft piece and that sort of thing, and it made me wonder who the Clippers should pair alongside Patrick Beverley in the backcourt there to start. And that's a tough question because, for one thing, we don't know the rotations next season. We don't know what's going to happen with Avery Bradley and Austin Rivers in terms of their player options and that sort of thing. So that backcourt depth is going to be in question for a while now until we find out what exactly the plans are for those players. But I think, you know, if you're looking for a new starting group, if you do need someone you know, to replace Austin or Avery in that starting lineup there at the two guard position, perhaps moving Beverly over to shooting guard and drafting Shea Gilgeous-Alexander or Colin Sexton would be a solid move to put at point. And that right there itself is also a tough question because it depends on what you're kind of going for with that point guard position. Do you want someone that's more of a playmaker or do you want someone that's more of a proven scorer and an athlete? And I think me personally, I would go more of a playmaker and with this case being Shea Alexander versus Colin Sexton, who's just more of a who's more of a athletic scorer and you know is more of a is not a traditional point guard in that sense of the word. As well, you know, I talked about yesterday with Shea Alexander's wingspan and length. He's a very gifted athlete, incredible size for a point guard, and that's, you know, a very versatile thing to have. And that's kind of the direction that the NBA is going right now with more more impressive looking, I guess, more impressive statures and that sort of thing with players. And it does seem like with the direction that Jerry West wants this team to go as well, that someone like Alexander would be a better fit on this team than Sexton. Plus, you know, considering the fact that, you know, a primary ball handler is pretty important on a team to get, you know, to move the ball around, get the ball out and create assists and create plays and scoring opportunities for your teammates. And I do believe that Alexander would be a better option to fill that need than Sexton would. So, because, you know, Sexton is going to take time to develop and Alexander is going to be a more, well, Sexton is going to be a great scorer right off the bat. But what I'm saying with Sexton there is that, you know, he's going to need time to develop into being a primary passing point guard and that sort of thing. Whereas Alexander, that's already his kind of game. And he also has the more gifted defensive ability and the longer wingspan and length just to make him more of a, so to speak, intimidating player on defense and a more physically impressive player on offense. So me personally, I do believe that pairing Bev with Alexander would be a better move there. But of course, that does depend on what happens with Bradley and Rivers coming back and the rest of the you know, guard lineup there and guard depth. So we'll see what happens with that moving forward. That's just my take on that. If you feel differently, shoot me a message. Let me know about that. We can talk about it. I'm always open for conversation. So moving on from that, guys, I'd like to touch on this this week's top stories, including an update on the Colangelo burner incident. If your company is interested in advertising to men between the ages of 18 and 44, your company should be sponsoring this podcast. Locked On Clippers is listened to by 98% men and 80% between the ages of 18 to 44. If that speaks to you, shoot me a message over at gcorpenning@outlook.com. That's gcorpenning@outlook.com to get things started. So guys, coming up, I'll be going over last night's Game 1 between the Warriors and Cavs. You know, a lot of headlines from that one, so I'll be spending a lot of time on that. But first, I would like to review some of this week's top headlines. And, you know, I talked about this last week, but, you know, once again, other than the Bev news, really, there really wasn't much to sift through in terms of Clippers news. And I know I keep on saying it, but we really should be finding out soon whether or not Clippers' potential free agents, you know, DeAndre Jordan, Avery Bradley, and Austin Rivers will be opting in or out of their current deals. I'm also thinking we should be hearing more soon about the Clippers' assistant coaching situation. And, I mean, there's been nothing but silence on that so far. It's kind of weird. But I think that, you know, given the time of year, it does make sense because this team, you know, with the lottery coming up, or not the lottery coming up soon, but the draft coming up soon, having lottery picks, having very important picks to make and very important decisions to make, it kind of does make sense why they're putting all their focus on the draft and not so much on coaching and free agency because, you know, coaching can be figured out anytime this summer. And free agency doesn't begin for another 10 days beyond draft night. So you do have quite a bit of time to figure out what's going to happen there. It would be nice to know what those players are going to do with their contracts before the drafts. Clippers can draft by need if they need to. And I'm sure that's going to happen. But in the off chance it doesn't, you know, there is still time to prepare between those two dates there for the team to make their own decisions about, you know, the future of the franchise and that sort of thing with those players. So that's the way it is right now. There's not much going on Clipperland in terms of news, but around the league there is quite a bit going on. Once again, talking about Brian Colangelo. Sorry, just a crazy story. First of all, with the whole burner account thing situation, I talked about on Wednesday, I believe. But you know, it's with the developments we're getting now and the increased investigation by the 76ers, it does seem like Colangelo won't be around much longer in Philadelphia. because the team has launched an internal investigation, it's not looking so good. A few people on Twitter have pointed out that some of the accounts reportedly used by Colangelo have phone numbers that are actually linked to his wife. And while no one is completely sure of the legitimacy of this, because, you know, anyone's phone number is in 9-1, that's the thing, they say that a couple of these accounts, the one confirmed to have been used by Colangelo, because he did admit to using one of them, has a different phone number, because you can see the last two digits of the phone number if you need to log in or something like that. It does have a different ending of that phone number than a couple of other accounts do, and the other accounts apparently match up with his wife's account and her her phone number, so that kind of adds a little wrench to the story. But you know, while that might be what the situation is, I think it would still cause Colangelo to be fired if it does prove true, because there is some pretty important information that was tweeted out from those accounts that only Colangelo and his direct like family and friends, not even his friends really, just his family and you know, associates with the organization would really know about that kind of stuff. So you know, tweeting crucial information, whether it's coming from Colangelo or his wife, not acceptable. And according to a few sources, the Sixers are planning to fire him based on their current findings, and that is via an update earlier this morning on Bleacher Report. So not looking good for Colangelo. What the Sixers do from here should be interesting to find out, you know, what they find and if that information is released. But, you know, we'll see where that goes from here. Not expecting much of an update about that until Monday, or, you know, earlier this weekend, but it should be a little while before that investigation concludes. But based on what we're hearing right now, it's not looking so good for him. So guys, to wrap up things today, I'll be hitting on some news around the NBA, and that news pertains strictly to last night's game one of the NBA Finals between the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Golden State Warriors. That game was really, truly one for the ages, and far from what I think most people, including myself, were expecting to see. You know, the Warriors were favored in that game by 13 points to start the night, and the Cavaliers were somehow on the cusp of victory near the end of the fourth quarter, which was really, I mean, that alone right there was impressive to me, just because, I mean, well, 13 is a pretty hefty line to be betting against, or to even introduce it as an opening line for a series. You know, it is, the Cavs are pretty undermanned against the Warriors, but it is still the best two teams in the league, and it is still LeBron James. You can't count out any LeBron James team, not that early especially. So while, you know, we might have been wrong to say it's going to be a sweep or something like that, it does look like the Warriors are going to win this series still. But just a crazy game all around, and a lot of weird headlines came out of it. But, you know, it was back and forth for a lot of the time. Warriors made a third quarter push in the beginning of the quarter, but the Cavs kind of came back in the end, and it was a close game going to the fourth quarter, and the fourth quarter was just nuts. But you know, skipping to the end of the, near the end of the fourth quarter, the game was, the Cavaliers had a, were losing 106 to 107, and George Hill got fouled, and the Cavs were in the bonus, so George Hill be getting free throws. He made the first pretty easily, and then the game was tied at 107 with just under 5 seconds left. And, you know, all Hill had to do was just connect on the second free throw, and Cleveland would have a lead. That doesn't mean Cleveland would have won the game, because the Warriors still had one timeout and about 5 seconds to work with. We can't say for sure if the Warriors would have made that shot or not, if they got a shot up at the other end of the court. But, you know, just because Hill missed that free throw doesn't mean the Cavs would have won that game. But what happened instead was that he missed the free throw, which was immediately recovered by J.R. Smith. And, you know, the Cavs at this point, with about 4.5 seconds left, still had a timeout remaining. And it could have used that timeout to set up a game-winning play. But instead, Smith dribbled the ball out with LeBron screaming in his face to turn to the basket. And eventually that did force overtime with the clock running out. And after the buzzer sounded at the end of the fourth quarter, James, you know, looked pretty irate, understandably, and Smith appeared to have mouthed, "I thought we were ahead," to James. So J.R. Smith, just really just poor awareness there of the situation going on, and, you know, should have known better given his veteran experience there, and, you know, multiple times in an NBA Finals alongside LeBron James. So just, you know, pretty poor awareness on Smith's part. Should have had a better idea of what the score was and what to do with that situation. You just can't have that. But still was going to overtime. It was 107 apiece. You know, momentum had clearly shifted, and the Warriors did capitalize on Smith's blunder, winning that game 124 to 114, despite LeBron James's 51 points, 8 rebounds, and 8 assists, which, by the way, is the most points scored by a single player in a game of the NBA Finals that lost. Only 5 players have ever scored 50-plus in a Finals game, and the other 4, including Michael Jordan, won the game they did that in. So, you know, certainly wasn't LeBron James's fault, because he scored 45% of the team's points and assisted on another quite a bit of that too, because he had 8 more assists. You know, James was likely responsible for more than half the team's points. So not by any means was it James's fault. It was more the fault of Smith in that one play, which, you know, it's a mistake, it happens, but just what a bad time for a mistake. That what I'm saying about LeBron, it's not really a cut in LeBron to say that, you know, he scored 51 points and still lost. That's a cut on his teammates. And, you know, one of whom in Smith sprinted away from the basket when they had a chance to win a pivotal game one in Oakland that, you know, no one thought they'd win. But the final minutes of the game were pretty horribly officiated. LeBron was called for a foul after cleanly stripping the ball from Kevin Durant. And, you know, not 30 seconds later, LeBron was clearly fouled in a similar situation. And, I mean, he got hit on the arm. It was all arm, no ball, and he didn't get a whistle. So that right there was kind of questionable. It didn't look like that was by any means the truth that happened there. But that's just, you know, the case. You know, refs make mistakes, that sort of thing. It's understandable. It's okay. But that continued to pile on a little bit, and it seemed like the calls were getting more questionable and questionable. And towards the end of the game there was when things really got pretty wild. LeBron James took a charge, or what looked like a charge, near the end of the fourth that was eventually overturned, and this one, I think, was perhaps the most questionable call of the night, you know, because after looking at the official rules, that sort of thing, you know, Twitter was pretty irate and pulled up the rules and found out, you know, why exactly this was allowed. So it turns out that officials are allowed to overturn a charge or blocking call if there is a question as to whether the player was in the restricted area or not. Which ended up being the reason why it was overturned. But the problem with that is that James was at least a foot outside of the restricted area, which, you know, was pretty obvious to everyone watching the game. And there was really no question from anyone, like I said, you know, but the refs that he was out of the area. And at the end of overtime, Tristan Thompson was immediately ejected for a common foul on Sean Livingston. The officials cited the reason being Thompson was ejected was because he made contact with his elbow to Livingston's face, which, you know, upon reacting to the game was over, didn't appear to be true. And still, that's, you know, pretty weak to throw someone out for that. But immediately after his ejection, Thompson argued the call, which is when the Warriors sort of swarmed him and kind of a scuffle broke out there on the court. And in the middle of all that, Draymond Green was leading the charge and that, you know, forced taunting Thompson into putting the ball into his face. So Thompson was issued a flagrant 2 despite already being ejected in that game, and Green received no discipline despite, you know, kind of going around the court and parading to the fans and continuing to taunt the Cavs, which is almost always handled with a technical foul or an ejection, but again, no discipline. So, I mean, it was all horribly officiated, and very few fans are happy, but, you know, game 2 should be a real fun one. The blood here is pretty bad, and we could be in for quite the series if this does continue. So, guys, that will wrap up today's show. Thank you once again for tuning in to Locked On Clippers. Come back next week for an NBA Finals update and coverage of the weekend's top stories. Once again, I am Garrett Korpening. I hope you enjoyed today's show. You can find more from the Locked On Podcast Network on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and other online podcast platforms. Catch you guys on Monday.